Hey, what's up, everybody? My name is Kate, and you're listening to This Australian Life, around Australia on the Community Radio Network from the studios of Joy 94.9. So you might be used to hearing Lisa from Word each week, which it's on a break right now from production, but I hope you stay tuned as I chat with people from around Australia on who they are and where they are in 2020.
Listening to Death of the Reader. We're stealing the airwaves here. Don't worry. We have permission. It is Radiothon 2020 here at 2SER. We are so excited to be here getting everyone hyped for community radio. We're doing a full hour and a half show today, grabbing the airwaves. Actually would have been on air about 60 seconds earlier there, Herds, but the machines, they took it from us. They nabbed those airwaves. They grabbed them out from under us, but we fought back. We fought back and we're here.
It's fine, Flex. Look, our speciality is in technology. Beyond a good old device X every once in a while. It is in people. It is in murder and crime. That's why we have to let you know this is not a crime right now. We're not stealing anything. We're just on the air. Talk about Death of the Reader.
Yes, we are doing Radiothon 2020 at the moment. It is your chance to subscribe, to help Sydney thrive, to keep independent news, current affairs, stories, ideas, music on radio, as well as score yourself some fantastic prizes. We have three sets of a pair of books to give away here on the show. Shout out to Andrew B. Patterson for giving us his Harry's series away this Radiothon, and I'm so excited. If you want to score yourself a copy of that or some of our other fantastic Radiothon prizes we'll be speaking about, head to 2ser.com, go to that banner page up the top where it says Radiothon 2020, and you'll be led through the process to subscribe. And if you enter during Death of the Reader here from 8 p.m. to 9:30 p.m., you'll be in the running to win yourself three whole books, including two of the Harry series, and the winner of today's decision.
Oh my goodness.
Herds.
Yeah.
We're getting towards the end of the year.
Yeah.
Big spoilers for those of you keeping track at home who listen to Death of the Reader. We have actually finished our last book for the year. We've been recording ahead because we've been stranded out of the studio, unsure what would happen in the current climate, what with the coronavirus, what with protests, what with jobs up in the air. We're not sure what we were going to be able to do, so we've recorded ahead, and that means, Herds, it is time here, this Radiothon 2020, to decide our order for review season, where we rank our most recommended stories for the year.
We're going to have the big decision time where we decide who was the best person in murder mystery ever for this year, for 2020. Yeah.
We will be back.
I'm excited.
We'll be back in just a moment. Don't go anywhere. You hear about these subscriber packs on offer this Radiothon, and then we'll talk about our rankings. This is Death of the Reader.
And you'll get all these.
It's 2SER Radiothon.
Subscribe right now at 2SER.com and you'll get all these things.
A fresh 2SER bumper sticker with a new design.
A 60-page full-colour listening post magazine.
A subscriber card.
Entry into all major Radiothon prizes.
And the chance to win prizes all year round.
Passionate subscribers also get a limited edition 2SER t-shirt featuring the Radiothon artwork.
Subscribe now at
2SER.com.
Of course, you are listening to Death of the Reader here on 2SER 107.3, pulling in an hour and a half show today until 9:30 p.m., taking over these airwaves for Radiothon to give our wonderful Sunday night crew a bit of a break while we pull in the hard yards. And Herds, it is time to get into this deliberation. We have 14 books to
14.
Fill in this year.
14. I was right off the air. Flex said it was 15. It was 14. I got them.
It's 15 if we include
all of the movies and TV shows and things that we watched.
Well, no, then it'd be 18.
No, but like we include them as one book.
Right.
Because the writing that is, you know, all the screenwriting, everything, all the words, and that adds up to one book.
I see. You're trying to give me more credit than I deserve at this point.
I guess so. No, I'm looking forward to this because we haven't really deliberated on who we, you know, which novel we thought was the greatest murder mystery of 2020. Well, that's a bit misleading.
I think we have a comfortable idea of at least what will round out our top four.
Yeah. We got an idea there, but we do have some honorable mentions as well. As we say, we have some movies and TV shows. We had the honor, nay, the privilege of experiencing all of the Sherlock Holmes, well, not all of it, but most of the Sherlock Holmes catalog. We watched the Robert Downey Jr. movies, mm-hmm. And Elementary, which was excellent. And BBC Sherlock, which I'm told goes off the rails very quickly. So that's exciting.
Off the rails, is an understatement.
Off the land, into the sea. But I did want to talk about, just before we even go that crazy.
Yes.
There was one movie that... Lord bless this movie. It was the little one that tried to go from, you know,
the
small screen to the big screen. Miss Fisher and the Crypt of Tears,
yes.
I believe it is. This was a movie that we watched sort of, I guess, a quarter of the way through the year. It was pretty early on.
It was about March before everything went to coronavirus.
To heck, yeah. Which, you know, put ourselves in a good frame of mind for watching it. So there's no bias here. There was an exciting train sequence, a train chase. There were elaborate and fantastic costumes, but the plot of Miss Fisher and the Crypt of Tears just fell apart by the end. Flex, how do you find that on returning to the plot there?
The thing is, as someone who's grown up in a family of...
fanatics.
Of fanatics.
Yeah.
And as well as being around the Australian crime fiction community, who do love Phryne Fisher. She is a charming, wonderful character. I have a soft spot for this movie.
Sure.
And it's not because I think it's good. I think it is, as I said earlier this year, an entertaining trash fire.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it's still an entertaining trash fire.
Yep.
So, you know, I would never argue. This goes... Just, I'm stomping it down all the way to the bottom of the review season list because it's where it belongs. But that is because review season is about what we recommend. Mm. It's not about what we think is best. It's not about what we think is most enjoyable. It's what we think you should put up the highest on your to-read list.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's not even a book, which gives it a disadvantage at the beginning.
Well, that didn't hurt Knives Out last year.
You're not wrong. It is the to-experience list.
Yeah.
That's a terrible tagline. Don't use that.
But I think that this movie is the kind of thing where you can put it on your list of movies to watch when you've run out of other things to watch.
Sure.
And you just want to just put something on because it is fun. It is crime fiction. It does have all of the things people love about Phryne Fisher, from the costumes to the set pieces to the just ever so off-kilter mysteries.
Mm.
Just not quite there, but close enough. You know, it's got the lot. It doesn't do anything badly in terms of what I would expect from a Phryne Fisher mystery movie.
Mm.
That said, I wouldn't expect much from a Phryne Fisher murder mystery movie.
It doesn't do anything badly, but it doesn't do anything goodly.
Mm.
Mostly. Anyway, point is, magic is real. I guess that's about where my thoughts settle on that. I don't think our opinion has changed much, though we do have... Did we talk for an hour in the end? We talked for a while on that one. There is an episode up on the podcast on 2SER, which you can support by becoming a subscriber during this radiothon.
Yes.
You can win a t-shirt, I hear. You can experience our full thoughts on that from early in the year up on 2SER.com. But yeah, I guess the next sort of part of the list, you know, I still want to chat about the movies because I do think they deserve to be separated from the chaff, or rather the chaff being separated, as it were.
Well, actually, before we move on from Miss Fisher and the Crypt of Tears,
I
just thought of this. This wasn't on the list of things to cover today.
Oh, you're going to bring up...
Enola Holmes.
Oh, no. Yep. Okay.
Does it deserve to make the rankings? It didn't get a full episode. It just got a bonus one on the podcast, which you can check out. Any of your favorite podcast streaming apps. But, you know, I did enjoy the movie. I would recommend the movie, but I don't know if it not getting a full discussion warrants it a full episode, because we did speak for just as long with Paul Verhoeven about his his book Loose Units, which is currently in my bag behind me as I've been reading through it the second time.
There you go.
So, you know, if we include Enola Holmes, do we then have to include, you know, Benjamin Stevenson's Either Side of Midnight? Do we have to include Paul Verhoeven?
Well, then we get into the slippery slope, right?
Exactly.
I think that Enola Holmes, because we had a dedicated episode with both of us speaking about it, look, maybe we can say we recommend it higher than Miss Fish and the Cryptideas. And mind you, that is a big gap there, but I don't know that I recommend it over, for example, the Sherlock Holmes stories that we're going to cover in a second.
I'll put it in the list with an asterisk.
You know, it was a bonus episode for the podcast, for the show, so I think it deserves to be in a bonus episode part of this list.
Yeah, I think it won't make review season though. It might make the list, but I think we'll leave its review up on the podcast rather than doing it again.
This is a special bonus feature for you listening right now to know that we rank Enola Holmes in second lowest place.
Like if you were to stand on top of Miss Fisher's Crypt of Tears and reach up as high as you could.
Daintily.
Just gently reach up, you could almost touch Enola Holmes.
That's it.
At least anyway. As far as what we recommend. Okay. So now that we've gotten that over and done with, we have a stretch of stories to get into.
Yes. That we did have a fight on this one.
It's tough because I think towards the bottom of the list, we kind of have to put things that we love, but you know, just didn't quite crank the numbers as much. And the one that hurts me the most, the one that pains me and aches me, we can't talk about. We're not allowed to talk about it.
No, we're under an agreement between the two of us, an honorable binding of trust and words, but we cannot speak about this possibly foreign murder mystery just yet.
At least until it's been on the show, we'll refrain from putting this on the list. But it's a tentative one that I'm very scared to kind of put on this list. I think my candidates' herds for the next position in the list, they all break my heart. They really do.
It's hard, isn't it? I want to tell you, this is controversial here, but we read The Sign of the Four during our run of this year. Now, that is a story starring the Sherlock Holmes. It's the second story, and it's a Watson feature, you know, written by the Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. It should be, by all rights, at the top of the list easily. But I think that it's just aged so poorly. It's just a little too much racism in there, and I don't know how you felt about this one, but I almost want to put that one, you know, next on the list here. How you feel about that one, Flex?
It's the kind of book where, as I read it, I was expecting to see more of other stories I'd read.
Sure.
I was expecting to see, in hindsight, the influence that it had had on other things I have loved.
Sure.
And don't get me wrong, it did, but it wasn't an enlightening experience like it is with some of the other stories we've covered, such as the early cases of Akechi Kogoro, which was very clear on its influences.
Oh my goodness.
And it was really inspiring to see how those influences had been used. Whereas The Sign of the Four was more kind of a stylistic influence. It was just a swashbuckling crime-solving duo. I don't think that Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's stories, as you say, have aged well enough to warrant being much higher up the list than at least the bottom quarter.
Yeah. I will say, I think that our opinions are a little bit swayed just because it is a Western European story, and that's like, you know, that's what we experience all the time. So seeing a story that is like what we experience nowadays, but like older and more racist, is not necessarily a good look. I feel like that has to go, if not the lowest book, but definitely in that like bottom three area. That's how I'm feeling.
Yeah, I'm kind of imagining it being similar to, what was the book from last year where we said that just other things had done it better? It was the LaRouge case.
That's the
LaRouge
one.
Case was a really great book, but it just didn't do anything as well as the things that it has inspired has done. And I think that I'm gonna let's put this in second last place.
Okay.
Let's put The Sign of the Four in, because not only, it's kind of fitting that the LaRouge case and The Sign of the Four would end up both in second last place.
It is. I will say, just to touch on LaRouge case for a second, I did enjoy, you know, now that I have a much broader kind of context for that story.
Yeah.
I love the way that story was, it was released like in the newspaper as like, you know, little bits and pieces of the story. Now that I've you know, read so much over the past 2 years on the show, I can appreciate, you know, what a challenge it is for an author to just decide to write piece by piece, releasing a piece and then reviewing everything, going back and forth. Like, that is a challenge an author kind of sets for themselves. I really appreciate that.
Now, we are, of course, here for Radiothon 2020 on 2SER, asking you to subscribe to help independent stories, ideas, and music thrive. There are four tiers of subscription that you could sign up for. You can check those out on the website at 2SER.com where you sign up. But if you go for passionate or lifetime tiers, you will also get yourself a bonus t-shirt with the limited 2020 Radiothon design.
Go for the t-shirt.
Our last year's design for our 40th anniversary was a fantastic shirt that I still wear regularly. Not only because it's just kept up, because it's a good quality shirt, but because I love the design. And I think this year's is great as well. So
you
if you are interested...
How come I didn't get one? Oh, my
you
goodness.
You have to subscribe, Hertz.
I know I have to subscribe.
Tell you what,
Hertz.
Later on
right
in this
now.
Show,
Let's
we'll walk you through the subscription process live on air to show how
that.
Simple it is. Just please don't say your credit card details.
We'll have to bleep that out. We had the technology, right? We can live bleep that out. Is that how that works?
Well, that's the kind of technology we could have.
We'd like
if
to
people...
have if you subscribe. That's the thing. If you subscribe, you get a t-shirt. You get to support our hobby of talking about murder mystery stuff on there. And we get live bleeping technology. What's the downside?
What's
Come
the
on
downside?
Now. What is the downside? I don't see one.
2SER.com is the place to go. You're listening to Death of the Reader, and we are discussing our list for review season coming up in a few weeks. In fact, a couple of months, because we've been recording ahead a bit. We have just ranked our bottom three stories for the year in terms of what we would recommend the most, not necessarily in terms of what we would like the most. That being Miss Fisher in the Crypt of Tears, Enola Holmes with an asterisk, because it won't be making the full list. As it was a bonus episode, and controversially, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's The Sign of the Four.
There you go.
Now, the other thing before we get back into this list, Herds, is of course, if you subscribe during Death of the Reader tonight until 9:30 p.m., you get in the running to win a copy of the two books in the Harry series. The Harry series by Andrew B. Patterson, some bookmarks to go along with it, and an ebook copy of the book that wins our review season list for this year. I think I know what it's going to be. It's going to be.
Could be anything.
But we haven't decided yet, so you're going to have to stay tuned. Herds, let's
Flex.
Press on in this list.
Let's do it.
The next one here... I'm gonna pose something to you, Herds. You may agree with you. You may agree with me. You may vehemently disagree with
me. Okay. Let's go. Throw it at me.
Robert Gott's Good Murder.
What? No. How?
Here's why.
How?
Here's
why?
Here's why.
I've fight on
since
this.
Read uh-huh. his one of his more recent ones. Uh-huh. I believe it was the Autumn Murders.
Oh, I don't like the angle you're going here. I see where you're going with this.
All I want to say is that Good Murder is. An excellent mission statement, but the execution in the later parts of the William Power mystery series are so much better
so hard.
That I want to put this down the list just because I think that it is a series well worth reading, but maybe skipping the first one.
This is another asterisk. I hate this. You're saying...
Let's be clear.
Uh-huh.
All of these are going to be asterisks.
Okay,
let's
good.
Not... Let's not... Like,
cannot be
ourselves.
Held liable. That's okay, fair enough.
All of
what
these...
you're saying, Flex, is that you want to put this novel lower on the list because you would recommend its siblings more than it.
Yes.
It's rubbish. That's rubbish. That's rubbish.
I
That's
have
cruel.
Picked out my favorite sibling from this series. It was The Serpent's Sting. Sorry, I read two of Robert
I was
going to
say, The Serpent's Sting was the most recent book when I picked this one. I recall, actually, there are a couple of ones, actually. There was Blood Ties and another one set in the World War II front, like Australia versus Japan, and people are being murdered in the Australian soldier side, technical terms.
Yes.
And, you know, Robert Gott is sent there to entertain. I heard that was the best of his novels of the group, but I really wanted to see, you know, the beginning of this character.
Yeah.
You can learn a lot by, like, the progenitor there.
Well, here's the other thing, is I wonder if because I read The Serpent's Thing, having read Good Murder, if The Serpent's Thing was better on account of it, because I grew to love Good Murder.
Yeah.
It grew on me more than any other book has from beginning to end.
Oh, I know.
Of anything we've covered in this show. Yeah. Most of the other books I've loved on this show, I've loved from the beginning, or I've loved at the beginning and they've fallen off the track. But this, I hated it at the beginning. I nearly asked Herds if we could skip this book on the show.
And I forced you
but
through it, and you
Robert
loved it.
Robert got pulled through, and it was so fantastic in the end.
Yeah.
But I don't know, Herds. Let's put a pause on that. Let's not decide on that
okay,
now.
Okay,
what would
fine.
Be your other candidates for this spot?
There are a couple that I'm kind of umming and erring on. I would like to put forward, just to pick one, Night at the Vulcan. That's the one I'm picking. Because let's be real. Okay, I love the theatre. I love Naomi Marsh. Bless her resting soul. But first off, we already have two novels by her on this list. So really, one of these has to be redundant. And it's not going to be mine in the morgue. I'm just going to spoil that for you. That one is much better.
This one is definitely going in this part of the list.
It has to. It has to go in the sort of lower quarter because it's just... I don't remember a lot of the plot. I remember being plotting, and it was one of those books where there's too many characters that don't really do anything. And the actual mystery... I think I solved it, but it was one of those, I don't know if half of what I'm saying is true or a fever dream.
This was the one with the...
Are you gonna spoil it?
Hold on, Let me mute the mics for just a second, all right? All right, Herds?
Yeah?
Let's just put on a Radiothon promo, and I'll tell you what it was that happened.
Okay, sure.
2SER Radiothon. Subscribe to help Sydney thrive. 2SER.com.
All right, well, there you go. Herds is back up to date on what's happening.
Look, I'm aware. The full context has been explained to me just so I fully, like, remember it. But yeah, it was the...
No spoiling it on air.
It was a convoluted Device X-style plot with a murder weapon that I sort of pulled from thin air, basically. It was one of those things where I just couldn't see any other thing being the murder weapon.
The best thing about this book was its imagery, symbolism, and atmosphere.
The setup and the way that... Because part of the mystery is that the murder that's happening, you know, today is a murder that had occurred, you know, in the theater previously. That's the whole reason why the theater had been closed down, and that's why it's called the opening night, or the night at the Vulcan, or the opening night at the Vulcan, because it's supposed to be the opening night of their new play, and it's going to be great, and da 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 da. But you know, then there's a murder on opening night, because of course there is. And so this murder mirrors one that's happened in the past, and again, a detective that's the what's his name? Alan?
Roderick Allen.
That's the name. I got half of his name. Roderick Allen comes in to solve this because he was part of the original case. Mm-hmm. And so it has a lot of emotional weight behind it. The stakes are quite high because there's this like, are the murders connected? Is there something deeper going on here? But there isn't really. That's kind of part of the problems novel is it has a lot of promise, has a lot of stakes being set up, but the payoff isn't great. And the characters just kind of fall apart.
Yeah.
And the murderer dies off screen.
Well, here's the thing with recommending this book. Is that this was the book that made Dame Naomi Marsh Dame.
It was.
And it wasn't the only action she did that put her across that line, but clearly the influence that she has had has been immense. And this book was a part of that.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing. The Damehood was not specifically because it was a good book, but because it put theater back on the map, which is great. And I love that. But it on its like compared to the books that we the other books we've covered this year on a like literally like recommending it right now level, I cannot in good conscience like put it on that pedestal. I want to be clear, I still love the book and Naomi Marsh is fantastic and Cilla Duffy, who's kind of taken up that, you know, that mantle afterwards, is also fantastic. But like, it's so difficult to recommend this book on its own merit without the sort of historical context. But, you know, if you want to hear more about that, of course, you can check out the episode on 2SER.com, which you should support because this is Radiothon. You can get a t-shirt. I'm going to keep telling you that. It's a great t-shirt.
You can. Also, there's a subscriber pack, including the Listening Post magazine, which is a 60-page magazine featuring stories about 2SER's past and present, a Radiothon bumper sticker, and eligibility for online prizes all through the next year, including, of course, the three sets of books that we are giving away today. Stay tuned to hear more about that if you haven't already. But you will, of course, as well be receiving a copy of the winner of this deliberation here on air.
Ooh.
And, of course, if you want to chip into this deliberation, hit us up, Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, at Flex and Herds. Let us know where you think things should go in our ranking. Oh, my goodness. Herds.
Mm-hmm.
Opening night at the Vulcan.
Oh, well, how do you feel now that I put that one forward? Do you think that it should sit higher than Robert Gott's Good Murder, which was a fantastic comedic romp of parody and fun? Like, we watched a man get covered in blood and then bang himself on the bottom of a bed, and was great. It was great.
The question in my mind is, was the character of the theater in Opening Night at the Vulcan enough to overpower the character of William Powell?
I was going
to
say, because he carries that novel on his back. Look, I want to stick with Good Murder. I think that it's just a far more entertaining read. And I think that it's like, I don't know, even if you're not a murder mystery fan, you could still get a lot out of it. But you're right. It is kind of funny that we've got these two novels that we're judging, or we're trying to like place not based on their merit as a murder mystery, but rather the character of the theater versus the character of this idiot wannabe detective character. Mm. I still want to say Good Murder should go in the slot higher. How are you feeling? Have I swayed you at all? Will this be one that we have to let the audience decide on?
This opening night at the Vulcan is going in this position.
Okay.
I think you're right, Herds. Okay. I think, truth be told, I've forgotten how frustrated I was with opening night at the Vulcan's ending, because I've been re-listening to those episodes for a bit of, you know, studying up as we prepared for this. And I don't remember feeling as frustrated as I sounded in those episodes, but I think you're probably right. I think this does deserve to go lower down the list. It's still a historically significant read, but that doesn't mean it's a read we need to recommend. I think that, you know, recommending... to exaggerate, mind you. Recommending trash because it is historically significant.
Whoa.
Doesn't make for the best...
War started with Naira Marsh. All Narimash, all of New Zealand.
All of Rotorua Noir, and the Narimash Awards community.
No, got him.
I don't mean to say that this book is trash, but just to exaggerate. But yeah, I think this deserves to go in this spot.
It's an idiom, right? It's an idiom.
Yeah.
I can forgive one or two idioms. Mm. Puns, though, I won't forgive.
All right, Herds. What's coming in next on the list?
Oh, goodness. There's a lot of options here. There's a lot of books we got here. Let me have a look here and see what I might slot in there. I'm kind of torn between a couple. Should I do it? Should I throw them under the bus? I want to put forward Sherlock in Shanghai.
Oh.
Let's put that one forward. Let's see how we feel.
Shao King.
Yes. On the grounds that this lovely Chinese murder mystery novel, which was incredibly, you know, important and proliferant in the translation and the moving of, you know, murder mystery into the East.
Yep, you're absolutely right.
I think that it doesn't do enough original, you know. I don't think it's as groundbreaking as something like, I don't know, Akechi Kogoro's stories, the early cases of Akechi Kogoro, just as an example.
I will say, for the record, you know, Not to agree or disagree just yet, because I want to hear your full thoughts.
Right.
But this was the book that got me to swear first on the show and have to edit it out.
It's true.
Because when they did the thing that we won't mention because we don't want to spoil the book, but if you listen, you know the thing that Cheng Shaoqing did. That was dramatic. It was intense. It was unlike anything we've experienced on this show, but it was just that one moment. I can't think of anything else that stood out from that collection.
Yeah, that collection had had at least one particularly insane moment where I was just completely lost in the solution, and that they would pull a stunt like that, I was completely floored. That said, I don't know if it was like a good stunt. It was mind-blowing and strange and a weird like narrative decision. Especially for our poor Watson character to have to deal with. But I don't know if interesting equals good all the time. Mm. Mind you, not to understate the importance of this novel, as I've said so far. But I think that I would challenge this novel would go in the sixth slot, I think? That's right. We have a list here. We're updating as we go.
This would be the fifth spot.
Yes,
including
indeed.
Enola Holmes. So really it's the fourth.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is an easy agreement for me. I think that
your case closed. No.
I think that this book is, again, it would be disingenuous to have said what I just said about Naya Marsh and not give Cheng Shaoqing the same treatment because it is a historically significant and important novel, but that doesn't mean it is a good read. I think you will enjoy it if you read it, but I don't think that it is as enjoyable as the other things we're going to recommend on the list.
Fair enough.
Again, you know, even being this far down the list doesn't mean it's a bad book.
No, we try to
only cover good books of this
story. As much as we can, yeah. If not good, but interesting. Like, I'm going to jump back a little bit. We've already talked about Good Murder, but I want to go back to it because part of the reason why I actually chose it for the show was because there were only two types of reviews. There was, I love this. This is the best. This is the most enjoyable murder mystery I've ever read in my life. And then this is terrible. Why would you even read this? Go read Simon Brett's books and they're much better.
Quite like, fittingly, Good Murder is going to be discussed until the beginning and end of this show.
Yes.
I bet you Good Murder will be the last book to find a place on this list, regardless of where it comes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely one of those books that you either love it or you hate it, but you also might flip between the two.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're not talking about that now. Flex, what do you want to put in the number six spot? You got something to go there or... We need some prodding.
From the ones we're allowed to talk about on the show at the moment.
I was going to say,
this
is the problem.
I think our last book for the year may be the one to go in this spot, and we are allowed to talk about that one. It is going to be The Honjin Murder Case by Seishi Yokomizu.
Interesting.
We have actually just recorded the final episode moments before coming on air today, and it's charming.
Yeah.
It's charming, but I can't recommend it. And
it's like half a good book.
it is half a good book.
It's half a very, very good book.
It feels like someone took an astounding murder mystery and just took entire chapters out of it to ruin it.
Yeah. I mean, we don't want to spoil our discussion on that novel. You know, I don't want to just dive in right now.
Why not?
As much as I love it. You want to just dive in it right now?
Give our full thoughts, but I think we can tantalize you enough with our thoughts on this
book. I just want to say this book I appreciate because it is hype. It is the hype man that we wish we had, you know, in everything that we do. You know, you want to get up out of the bed in the morning, like, man, I just want to stay in for another 10 minutes. You want this final book to be there saying, get up. It's going to be exciting. It's going to be a great murder mystery. And we love murder mystery. It's going to be more of it. Maybe there'll be a murder mystery in your life.
Well, okay. Here's the thing I want to say, though, Herds.
Yes.
I would say that this book was the Benson murder case of the East. It referenced
spicy.
Other books. It did so little aside from its core mystery. So putting it above S.S. Van Dyne from last year, where he came in with the Benson murder case in third last... This is
I think it's fitting.
I think that's fair. I think that's fitting. It's an interesting one because it is so exciting when it opens, but falls flat. It goes off a cliff. It was one of the ones I was mentioning earlier when we were talking about Robert Gott's Good Murder, where I loved it at the start, but it just cascaded to an abyss by the end of the novel. So I think that's a fitting one.
Yeah.
Let's take a moment's break, Herds, as we press on with our deliberation for review season 2020.
Almost halfway through.
You're listening to Death of the Reader here on Radiothon 2020. This is 2SER 107.3.
Want a bit of Sydney culture this Radiothon?
2SER has you covered with these very Sydney prizes.
A $100 Casula Powerhouse Art Centre Pass.
A one-year membership to the MCA and an MCA Shop prize pack.
A family pass to the Streeton and Archibald Prize exhibitions at the Art Gallery of New South Wales.
A family pass to one of 12 museums and historic houses from Sydney Living Museums.
Check out these and other prizes at 2scr.com/prizes.
Subscribe now at 2scr.com to win and help Sydney thrive.
You're listening to Death of the Reader here on 2SER during Radiothon. Thank you so much if you've gone to 2SER.com to subscribe. Once again, there are bonus prizes for subscribing during Death of the Reader tonight until 9:30 p.m. You could win yourself two of Andrew B. Patterson's books, a few bookmarks, as well as the winning book from today's deliberation about review season for the year. Now, Herds.
Flex.
We've reached this point. We've put in three books, two movies so far. I think it's time to throw the rest of Sherlock Holmes under this bus.
Yay! I'm glad you went with that particular metaphor. I was gonna add that on the end there. I'm glad you stole it from me. No, I totally agree. I think that they need to be bundled together.
I'm torn on
what is it, Flex? What is your problem? What is
BBC
your major malfunction?
BBC Sherlock maybe doesn't deserve to be with the other two.
You know what? That's fair. I definitely enjoyed, you know, because when we you know, watch these and we'll watch party, we had a good old time. I had already seen the movies. I had never seen BBC Sherlock or Elementary.
Yeah.
And
the movies being Robert Downey Jr. Yes. directed by, oh my goodness, I can't believe I've forgotten his name.
Get
Guy Ritchie.
Right. It took him like 2 seconds to figure out. This man has too good of a memory. I had seen the movies before, so I was a little bit biased against them. I'd still put them, I think, at the top.
Comfortably.
Okay, good. I was worried you were going to disagree with me there. I think that Elementary impressed me so much that I have to put it in that second slot. BBC Sherlock was just a crazy train.
Like, there's a long gap between BBC Sherlock and the other two.
Like, even having already seen the movies and having attachment to them, I could see where the Elementary show sort of succeeded.
Yes.
You know, there were some elements where I was like, oh, yeah, this is like...
Some elements.
This is like really interesting... You know, character arcs and character and like plot. There's a plot in this that actually isn't just rubbish. Also, Game of Shadows is kind of terrible, but that's beside the point. Mm-hmm. We don't worry about that movie. It never existed.
Well,
but BBC Sherlock is like so far down the chain there, you know?
It's amazing to think that it took four seasons for people, myself included, to realize quite how terrible BBC Sherlock was. But once you realize and go back and watch the rest, it falls apart. It's like someone's taken out the foundational leg of scaffolding.
Yeah.
It just collapses. And
I mean the moment that I still remember from that show was when, you know, Sherlock shows up to the crime scene in the first episode and there's a policewoman there, and I think he's talking to, she might be talking to Watson actually, but she says like, you know, well, that's Sherlock, like he's in all sorts of trouble. And Watson's like, well, why do you say that? He's like, well, he has a drug problem, he's antisocial, he's a psychopath. Like, she just like lists off all of his character traits, and it's like, we couldn't have been shown this. Like, there's too much explaining going on in this story. What is happening?
The thing is, I still stand by the fact that of the three, BBC Sherlock has some of the best performances.
Produced? No, performances.
Performances? If you look at just the acting in isolation, they have done an excellent job. And yes, the production value is fantastic.
It is.
Especially for a public broadcaster like the BBC.
Yeah.
But that's not enough to hold it up.
No, the writing and the plot and like the way that they take, because the first episode was actually like a pilot. It was a much shorter pilot originally. And so they basically just added in scenes and twisted elements of the plot around and gave some characters like bigger roles. And it just bloats the whole thing. Mm. And all of these elements are supposed to be quote unquote foreshadowing for stuff that happens later down the line in the plot. But they also just like throw Moriarty at you in the first episode, which completely ruins any surprise that character might have had.
Yes.
Like, and like I've had some people say that that Moriarty, when he, you know, becomes a tangible presence on the show, is the best part because of the actor and the energy and like the crazy plots that they throw at you. But I can already I can feel Flex having a minor migraine in the corner over
Here's
there.
The thing. As far as the acting being great, Andrew Scott, who plays Moriarty in that show, does an excellent job being
good.
The complete deranged lunatic that he sets out to be. It is so over the top and compelling in a way that captures the spirit of the show's ludicrousness perfectly.
Sure.
I think if you go in expecting BBC Sherlock to be an exaggerated, bloated mess, you will actually have a good time because it does a good job doing it.
Now, that's the biggest asterisk I've ever heard in my entire life.
No, it's the second biggest after Miss Fisher and the Crypt of Tears.
No, that's fair. I'll give you that one. You can have that particular asterisk.
The question is, Herds, we've bundled these together. Do we want to put BBC Sherlock further down the list? I would maybe put it just above The Sign of the Four, below Opening Night at the Vulcan.
Above? Oh, is it above Vulcan, though? I kind of just want to put it at the very bottom.
No.
I don't know. I probably wouldn't put it lower than Fisher, but I'd probably put it above Fisher, honestly, just off the top of my head, now that I'm thinking about it, that's where I put it. But honestly, I think the spirit of it is to package them as a one and done deal. That's my vibe right now.
Well, I think this is a tough one. If we are going to bundle them, they go in this spot. But BBC Sherlock may need to go either side of The Sign of the Four.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure which side, but one of them. I feel like, given that we hinged our argument for The Sign of the Four being that low on the fact that it hasn't aged well, it would be inconsistent to say that this isn't better. Because this has... This still keeps up with the times. It still maintains the swashbuckling romp, even if it is bloated. But, you know, I don't cringe watching this show. I laugh at it.
I guess so. I suppose if we take the stance, because this is, unfortunately, a ranking about, you know, what would you recommend to someone, not just is it a good piece of media?
Yeah.
I would put it higher than the Sign of the Four. That is where I would put it, if only because when I got to experience this, I got to experience it with a group full of people, you know, watching together, throwing spoons at the screen. Wait, wrong movie. Throwing popcorn at the screen, having a good time. That's a reference to movies. I think that, yes, if we're going to go by would you recommend watching it, I would say above Sign of the Four. But the asterisk on this one is that you watch it with friends or with some knowledge that it's going to be garbage and you're going to laugh at it. And that's just how it's going to be.
Yeah. Mm. That said, I think we can comfortably put the other two Sherlock adaptations together.
Yes, I think
that's
fine.
They are of equivalent recommendation value because Elementary has a lot of flat episodes in there, but it also maintains its consistency a long way through the seven seasons of the show, as I spoke with Paul Verhoeven about when we spoke with him. And you can, of course, check our extended interview with Paul Verhoeven on the podcast, any
Always.
Of your favorite streaming apps.
Mm-hmm.
And Guy Ritchie, I would rank it higher if it wasn't for the second movie. I think that because we are including the second movie, we have to put it down lower.
I agree.
Because the first movie...
I mean, the first movie still has that terrible boat scene, so I don't feel too bad, you know?
Yeah, no, you're not wrong. The first movie still has faults that become more present in the second movie. But I think that it could maybe bump up one or two places if it was the first movie by itself. But let's stick them together, put these here, wrap them up neat and in a bow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fine.
And RIP to BBC Sherlock.
That's all right.
May it rest in pieces.
I don't feel bad about that. I don't feel bad about BBC Sherlock. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
These adaptations that are trying to be very modern and up to date, but completely miss the point. I'm totally okay with taking something like that and just dropping it off.
Yeah.
Off a train bridge.
Besides, it makes me feel less heartbroken about the other books that we have to rank on this list.
Well, that's the problem. We're coming into the second half now of these novels here, and now we're going to rank our favorite children between, you know, which is the least favorite of the favorite.
I know.
And
oh, my
goodness. Impossible. I'd like to say everybody gets a gold star and we go home, but that's not how this works. we have to pull the trigger, so to speak.
If you are listening in at home, and thank you so much for doing so, be sure to hit us up at Flex and Herds, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Let us know your thoughts on our rankings for this year so far. You're listening to 2SER.
2SER Radiothon. Subscribe to help Sydney thrive. 2SER.com.
All right, Herds.
Flex.
Let's just go over our list so far.
All right.
Exclude Enola Holmes for the moment just because its position
is set. It's a bonus one. You've already missed the bonus. It already happened.
Miss Fisher and the Crypt of Tears is our bottom rank, followed by The Sign of the Four by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, followed by BBC Sherlock.
That's right.
Then Opening Night at the Vulcan by Nio Marsh.
Yep.
Sherlock in Shanghai by Cheng Shao-King, and then bundled together Elementary and Guy Ritchie's Sherlock Holmes.
Did you get Good Murder in there? Is that number five?
No. We've said we haven't decided on that yet.
Oh my goodness, we end solidly decide on that. Oh my goodness, it's still in the running.
It is still in the running.
I had a mental blank. I'm so glad. I'm so happy that's where that is. Awesome.
Okay. Now, what do we go with next, Herds?
It's a great question.
We're reaching the crunchy part of the list where we really are going to have to deliberate between some of these. I think...
We haven't talked about baseball. Have we talked about baseball? Can we talk about the baseball?
We're not allowed to talk about baseball.
We can't talk about baseball because I would kind of like to put baseball at this on the list.
Whoa. No spoilers.
I'm not spoiling anything. I'm just saying, just for posterior reasons... You know, for the future, I feel like in my heart, this is where baseball goes.
I don't know what you're talking about. What's this baseball?
You know what?
Unrelated to this baseball, Sayonara Slam is the novel that we'll be covering on the show for the next three
thank
weeks.
You.
If you tune in, we'll be speaking with author Naomi Hirahara as well as some other wonderful friends about the experiences of the novel. And I can't wait to get to that. Herds.
Yeah.
No more on this novel. No more on this
novel. That's it? That's all we can say?
None. We have to make sure that this novel is allowed its appropriate airtime.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
Before we trash on it.
Say about an unrelated novel is that Armica is the best character.
Who now?
Armica Williams.
Who?
That's all I'm going to say.
I don't know who you're talking about. Ernst
Williams. It's Amicus something.
I still have to solve this book. I don't know who you're talking about.
I know, right? It's not like we record anything in advance. We would never do that. We would never be so prepared in our lives.
It's been such a switch up this year, going to doing recorded shows after doing them all live for 2019. You know,
it's part of the fun. Part of the fun of 2020, you know, I think we can all appreciate that.
For sure.
Yeah.
Now, this spot here, I want to put a good novel. I want to put a properly good novel.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like my top candidates are Robert Galbraith's The Cuckoo's Calling.
Yep. That's,
Good Murder by Robert Gott.
Mm.
And maybe The Early Cases of Akechi Kogoro.
I would not put Kogoro here, personally.
Really? You'd put it higher?
I would. Okay. I loved that novel.
Let's talk about that one, then. Let's talk about that one.
Okay, sure. I know. I loved that one. I loved reading this, like, anthology series and getting to, like, read the Japanese murder mystery, I guess.
Yeah, this one...
I enjoyed The Dwarfs so much.
This one obviously gets a huge bonus for how clearly it has inspired some of the other things that we are covering on the show and that we have read elsewhere. And I think if you read it, you will immediately notice references in other media you've consumed.
Yep.
And that was one of the wonderful things we spoke with Matt Sainsbury from digitallydownloaded.net when we were covering that book. And you can, of course, catch that up on the podcast if you want to listen to our episodes on The Early Cases of Akechi Kogoro.
Matt, I know you follow us on Twitter. I hope you're listening in right now. I really loved that series of books, or series of stories, because not only did we get... You know, the first story, the case of the murder on D Hill, which was Akechi's, you know, the
foundational text.
Yeah, foundational text. And also the whole point was that the author was trying to write a murder mystery that relied on being set in Japan. It wasn't just saying, you know, how can a Western murder mystery be set in Japan, but like, how can we create a quintessentially Eastern murder mystery?
Yeah.
And that philosophy follows Akechi Kogoro through all the stories that he's in, all the way through to The Dwarf as well, in which we don't just have this story of murder mystery and grisly crime that has a great antagonist and like many wonderful twists that Flex despised, which I loved. But we also get some very interesting, grotesque, like mostly sort of erotic stuff going on in there, which is, you know, that's Japanese media for you. That's what that is. But looking at the dwarf in particular as a character and how strange and how just weird that novel is. Like, for me, as someone who is always looking for something strange and weird, I'm going to push as hard as I can to get Akechi Kogoro up in like the top three. Like, that is how I feel about this book.
There is a very particular reason that we're not allowed to mention on the show as to why we love The Dwarf so much.
Yeah.
And it's hard for me to put this one anywhere because, as I said, it gets that huge boost from being so inspiring for the other authors that we've covered on the show. But at the same time, I didn't enjoy the read that much. The moment that sticks out to me from that book is getting to flip over the page in The Dwarf and seeing the you know, double fake out at the end. And that was so good because we were in the same room when it happened and you got to see me freak out and me sit there and then have to, you know... Yeah. Do the rest of that episode. That was a really enthralling way to do that book, but that's the only thing from that book
that's so interesting.
Particularly like, sticks out to me in terms of what I would recommend for
that's
someone.
So interesting. I enjoyed so much more about that book, I think, than you did. That's so funny. Because the way that they did the dual antagonist thing and like juggling the murder mystery with the other elements of the story, like I think that was so well juggled. And also, despite two of the stories in the four being write-offs, essentially, the writer or the author said, you know, after the point that the ghost and the Black Hand Gang, I hope that's the right gang there, the Black Hand Gang, you know, he said that these novels or these stories he didn't actually like very much. He wasn't happy with them, but he published them anyway because he had to release the story. I still thought those were interesting reads, and just the fact that the author was willing to be so honest about them, I thought led some tremendous points to the overarching narrative of Akechi Kogoro like becoming a proper character. And as I say, I think that the decisions that have been made around the detective and that make him such a standout character in the end, in line with some of Agatha Christie's detectives, one might say, spoilers, I think make it a standout, you know? That's where I'm feeling.
What would be your pick for this spot then?
What were the other ones that we mentioned? The Cuckoo's Calling by Robert Galbraith. What was the other one you wanted to put
on? A Decent Interval by Simon Brett.
Ooh, now I'm trying to think. No, you solved The Cuckoo's Calling, and
correct.
I solved
A Decent Interval.
A Decent Interval by Simon Brett, friend of the show. Academic extraordinaire. He was one of the very first guests we ever had on the show.
He was.
So really, that's a bias there.
Simon Brett has been very informative to us on this show, not only because he's just so wonderful to talk to and we love him dearly, but also because he's had that deep association with the Detection Club in the UK. It means that we've been able to get his perspective on, you know, the most in crowd there is, ostensibly, in crime fiction, because that's a club that was founded by Agatha Christie and co. in the 1930s to talk about murder mystery, and it still is going today. And Simon Brett was their second last chairperson. And, you know, we've referenced him a lot on the show because the things that he have said have been very well put and very informative to how we've approached the murder mysteries we've covered since.
Yeah. I kind of struggle to place these two.
Because he was some of the first murder mysteries I read
that also
when I was getting
hurt
into actually like the act of solving them.
I think that between The Cuckoo's Calling and A Decent Interval, I would rather, here comes the drum roll, I think I would place A Cuckoo's Calling slightly lower.
Okay.
I think of the two.
Mm-hmm.
I think that in hindsight, the, like, because there's a lot of what I enjoyed about that novel was the thematics and, like, the allusions to Greek mythology and, like, kind of the broader context of the novel. But the actual story itself, I don't know that I enjoy as much on a reread, I guess. I don't know if there's as much for me to kind of pick apart. I don't know. How did you feel about that one?
I reread it almost immediately having read it, so my perspective didn't shift a lot based on my reread. But I think that the main thing that I would recommend The Cuckoo's Calling for is not overall its plot or its thematics, but just for how well written it is.
Sure.
It in terms of the books we've covered up there, it is up there with The Rules of Backyard Cricket in terms of its use of language to tell its story.
Yeah, of course.
How good its story is a different matter altogether.
Yeah,
and I think
sure.
The Rules of Backyard Cricket just destroys
That's an easy choice there, isn't it?
Well, that's clearly going higher up our list.
Well, this is the thing when we're talking about modern murder mysteries, right? We expect them to be better than their older counterparts and that sort of thing. I also did enjoy it as an example of a detective with a serious physical, like, disability.
That's
like,
true, yes.
I did enjoy that aspect of the story.
It was played for laughs
a little bit more than I'd like.
I don't know if it was necessarily more than I'd like, but the fact that I recall those moments first.
I mean, my favorite scene in that entire novel is something that has nothing to do with the actual plot, which is probably telling. For me, it was the scene when a detective, what's his name? Do you remember his name? I feel bad.
Cormoran Strike.
That's the man. When he's going to his, like, his nephew's, like, birthday party.
Yes.
And he says, oh, I got this little present for you. Here's a toy soldier. And his nephew goes, bang, bang. And he goes, bang, bang. And like, don't you get a... I'm doing the voices now. This is bad. He got me into this flex. He's like, you know, don't you get a gun at work, Mr. Strike? And Cormoran Strike's like, oh, I don't usually use a gun.
He can't afford it anyway.
And that, of course, plays into the ending, which is quite a, like, dramatic battle between culprit and detective, which is nice. It's a very visceral book. But yeah, that moment of humanity for the detective of showing that this guy who just, as the Greek heroes do, keeps having problem after problem, makes mistake after mistake, and has to keep proving himself as being able to overcome his disabilities and his own problems. Like, I really enjoyed that on a sort of emotional and thematic level. But I don't know that the actual plot really stuck with me.
Here, I think, is why I'm going to agree with putting this in this spot.
Sure.
And let's write this in. The Cuckoo's Calling going in above
in
Elementary
list.
And Guy Ritchie Sherlock.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the main thing for me about this is that it is a very kind of popcorn-y book.
Yes.
It is extremely enjoyable. It is extremely well written. It deals with its historical analogies and its thematics very well. But on this show, I think if you are expecting recommendations for us, I'd like to approach it with some aspect of literary merit.
For sure.
And I don't mean to speak down on this and say, oh, you know, it doesn't quite meet our high standards.
It doesn't meet this
academic credibility.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't belong in a library. You know, that's okay. And I guess that above that, we'll put a decent interval. We'll move on.
Yeah. No, I think that this is a decent spot here, just because pairing it with Elementary and Guy Ritchie's Sherlock, kind of, it's in the right ballpark in terms of where our recommendations lie, because it's just more of an entertaining, enjoyable read that you can think deeply about, and you can look into the themes such as fame that are, you know, very well handled in it. But this is a really tough one to place, honestly, because I think that it does such a phenomenal job at something I normally wouldn't care for.
I think let's put it here. I think so. I think that the individual moments of this story are fantastic, but I think that overall, we're going to have to put it in this sort of middling spot.
Yeah.
Which isn't to say that it's a bad novel at all. You know, we're going on about how hard it is to place these things, but like, they're all fantastic in their own ways.
Yeah, everything above BBC Sherlock and The Crypt of Tears is really just much better.
Very much worth reading immediately. Mm.
I would say, just to put another asterisk on this
another list. Another asterisk. We're going to run out of budget for asterisks this year.
We only have so many to throw around. But I think that compared to The Sign of the Four, if I was just ranking, if I didn't have the other stories to squeeze in the middle here, I would say that this is probably the closest bracket of recommendation on the list.
Mm-hmm.
Because going from The Sign of the Four to The Cuckoo's Calling is a very small step in my recommendation. We've packed a lot in there. But I think that BBC Sherlock, The Sign of the Four, which has, you know, it has been very important and very formative, but it isn't so well written. Flip that around. The Cuckoo's Calling is kind of the opposite of that.
I think
they kind of fall very close to each other in terms of where I would rank them. Just in isolation.
For sure. So,
Hertz.
Are we ever going to be done to this book? Goodness.
No. What do you want to do? We are here for Radiothon 2020.
Oh, that's true. We are here for that, yeah.
We are a community radio station, which means that we thrive on your support, and Sydney thrives on having a wonderful community like you here to support 2SER, to keep independent stories, ideas, music, news, current affairs, all of that good stuff on air. If you head to 2SER.com, hit up the banners on the top of the page, you can find your way to become a 2SER subscriber. Help keep us on air. Help
get a t-shirt.
Wonderful stuff coming your way.
Get a t-shirt.
If you subscribe at a passionate or higher tier, you will, of course, receive the 2020 Radiothon Limited Edition t-shirt.
T-shirt. Look, I know what I'm here for. Help Sydney thrive. Who worries? Don't worry about that.
Let's just mute Herds.
Let's go.
All right. Well, it's time to move on to the next suggestion on the list. Herds. A decent interval.
Yeah, I think we're pretty much unanimous on this one. A decent interval is one of those novels that I remember fondly, and I really like the standout character in this one is the detective himself. You know, this old man who isn't really a detective and just kind of stumbles his way through things, but on occasion shows that he's actually really smart and savvy.
Mm.
This is another one of those novels where I have, you know, one or two scenes that stand out to me. And the scene that I will always remember is when he goes to the PR company and he says,
yes.
He's like, I need information. I'm an old man. And they're
we
can't tell you anything. Look, he's old as the hills are young or whatever. It's fine. But he goes to this PR company trying to get information. And at first, they're just destroying him with everything they have. They're like, we can't tell you this. Legally binding that. Da-da-da-da-da. Legal talk. And he's so confused because one of the big themes of the novel is that he doesn't understand new trends. He doesn't understand technology.
Yes.
And this, of course, plays into the solution. Like, one of the things he says very early on is that he's trying to figure out whether he should refer to, you know, a female actor as an actress or not. He's like, hold on, what do I say here? How do I remain with the times? It's like the big problem he's having.
Mm.
But he goes to this PR company and they're running circles around him. And then he, you know, realizes, I think it's that they're having an affair is like the big thing that he stumbles on. And so even though he doesn't understand how the world works, he understands how people work. And he understands that that is a piece of information that he can use to twist the situation in his favor. And it happens so quickly, right?
Here's what's even better about that scene to be heard.
What are you throwing at me now?
And it's emblematic of the brilliant character dynamics in this book, because the character dynamics elevate this book far beyond any of the other aspects
Absolutely.
Of it. And that is that he comes into that scene thinking that he's on the back foot.
Yes.
And he's struggling
yes.
to propel the conversation because he's on the back foot, until he realizes that they think they're on the back foot.
Yes.
And
yes.
then he capitalizes.
Exactly.
And
right.
it's so brilliant yeah. because you are dragged along with that realization mm-hmm. in such a compelling way. And it is a fantastic example of how well this book does mm. those power plays, because we have so many different characters that all have different roles
yes.
in the story, and they're all at such different places in society. Sticking Charles Paris in the middle of it and just throwing the scales off is a fantastic way to explore the return of this 15-year absent character mm-hmm. as Simon Brett came back to it from years away from show business.
Yeah.
It is essentially a personal diary of him re-entering show business told through this character. And it comes across with such authenticity in those aspects in a way that was just... It was charming. And to be clear, this was a book that I read when I was first getting into solving murder mystery. Just be aware, in a few seconds, the computer may be about to steal the show out from under us.
Uh-oh.
And I'll have to mash a button, so if suddenly
That's
music
right.
comes over the top of me, don't be alarmed. But I do think that this book, being so formative for me, solving murder mystery, did a great, great job of highlighting how important characters are to murder mystery in a way that isn't traditional.
Hmm.